welcome to our weekly podcast on legal issues in the post-COVID world. My name is Gil Porter, a partner at Haynes & Boone and chair of our COVID-19 task force. Our topic today is the CARES Act. Some of you participated in our webinar coverage earlier this week, but there are always important developments to report. Nathan Koppel, our Director of Media Relations, will continue his role as moderator of this podcast series, but first, our disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only, is not intended to be legal advice, and does not establish an attorney-client relationship. Moreover, by their very nature, the topics we discuss in these podcasts will be fast-moving and subject to change. Legal advice of any nature should be sought from your legal counsel. Let me turn it over to Nathan.
Thanks, Gil. So today it's Thursday, April the 16th, and we are going to delve back into the CARES Act, which is the landmark $2 trillion relief package, which I'm sure most of our listeners know about. It offers different types of relief to businesses, but as I understand it, it can prove to be a bit of an obstacle course because the law does contain restrictions on double dipping. So businesses can't claim benefits that are considered duplicative. So as they navigate the CARES Act, it's really important for companies to decide which relief program within the CARES Act landscape is the right choice for them. And to think about these issues today, we've invited Susan Wetzel, who heads our Employee Benefits and Executive Compensation Practice Group, along with a returning guest, Brent Becker, who's a member of our M&A Practice Group. Again, they're going to talk about some of the questions and issues that businesses need to think about when deciding what type of CARES Act relief is right for them. So as I understand it, there are two major types of relief, forgivable loans and tax credits. Brent, can you describe the Paycheck Protection Program, which is the best known forgivable loan program?
Sure, and thanks for having us, Nathan. We're excited to talk about this, which is obviously a very hot topic right now. So the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP as it's become known quickly, is a $349 billion program that was established as part of the CARES Act. In general, businesses with under 500 employees could apply for this loan, a loan equal to 250% of their monthly payroll costs. And if they spent that money on the appropriate uses in the first 8 weeks after the loan would be forgiven. And so it converts very quickly, if businesses do this right, from a loan program to a grant program, which is why we're sitting here on Thursday, April 16th, and in 14 days, the initial tranche of money, you know, appropriated for this program has already run out because it has been of intense interest from businesses across the country.
Yeah, that was major news that really just developed in the last few hours, it sounds like. And I'm going to want to come back to that, Brent, and ask you and Susan as well what we do now that we've run through the money. Susan, can you provide a summary of one or two of the tax credit programs that are available under the CARES Act?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do so. There are two primary ones that we focus on, the first of which is the employee retention credit. This tax credit is a credit that's basically equal to 50% of the qualified wages an employer pays between March 13th, 2020 and December 31, 2020, and it's taken against the Social Security portion of the employer's quarterly payroll taxes. The credit is basically available on the first $10,000 of compensation, so what you're looking at really here is a $5,000 credit. An employer is eligible for the credit if the employer carried on a business in 2020 and either its operations were fully or partially suspended due to COVID-19 related government shutdown order, or its gross receipts declined by more than 50% compared to the same quarter in 2019. So you're really going to be looking at what the gross receipts were in one quarter versus in 19 versus 2020. And once the gross receipts become more than 80% of the gross receipts from that prior quarter, your significant decline is no longer in place. Whether wages will constitute qualified wages for purposes of the tax credit really depends on how many full-time employees that the employer had in 2019. If they had more than 100 full-time employees, only the wages that are paid to employees who are unable to provide services because of the shutdown will be counted. If it's 100 or fewer full-time employees, all wages paid to employees other than sick or family leave wages paid pursuant to the FFCRA will be covered. So it really is a matter of how big are you and who is on leave versus not. Then there's a second type of credit, and this is actually more a deferral, and this is for the Social Security taxes. And this one is actually one that is extremely helpful because it can go into place right now. This allows the employer to defer the employer portion only, not the employee portion, of the payroll taxes that are due. And that deferral actually lasts from the first 50% until December 31, 2021, and the other 50% until December 31, 2022. So it's a great opportunity for employers to really defer some of their costs. The other benefit of that, and we hear a lot of questions on this, is that money doesn't have to be put into a trust. When you take the employee portion out of someone's paycheck and you get it out of their money, you have to actually put it into a trust before you then send it to the IRS. You can't commingle it with your assets. This employer portion, you don't have to do that for it. So it really does allow the employer to use this for current cash to help with operations.
Susan, am I right in understanding that if a business has a forgivable loan under the Paycheck Protection Program, that could limit their ability to claim tax credits?
You are right. The biggest issue on the employee retention credit is if you get a PPP loan, you can't get the employer retention credit. So that's the first kind of absolute prohibition. On the Social Security tax deferral, it's not quite as much of a prohibition as a delay in or a period of time that you're not going to be allowed to take it. Once you get that PPP loan, as long as it's outstanding and you have not received a notice that that loan is going to be forgiven, then you can continue to defer the Social Security taxes. So you could have the PPP loan outstanding and defer the Social Security taxes. As soon as you get notice that your loan is going to be forgiven, you have to stop deferring those taxes. Now, one of the big issues we see employers is there's confusion as to, well, do I now have to pay all of those taxes I just deferred? And the answer is no, not yet. Anything that you were deferring while your PPP loan was outstanding and you had not yet gotten that notice of forgiveness can be deferred still until those later dates, that December 31, 2021, and that December 31, 2022. So it's definitely something employers should be looking at if they have a PPP loan and they haven't gotten notice that it's going to be forgiven.
Just to add on to that, you know, we've gotten a lot of questions of, okay, well, when will this forgiveness kick in? Do I have to wait 2 years for my loan to be forgiven? And I think the exact timing is a little bit up in the air right now, just because we're still at the application stage of this process and we're rolling out regulations, you know, on a daily basis. But I think it's safe to assume that the forgiveness process will really commence probably, you know, 10 weeks from now, somewhere around that time frame. So you're looking a lot closer to the time of the initial 8-week period in which the forgiveness is part of the discussion as far as what you can spend the money on, what will be forgiven, as opposed to looking towards the maturity date of the loan.
Yeah, and what if the loan is only partially forgiven? Does that still act as a bar to claiming tax credits from that point forward?
It does. It does. Any portion of the loan being forgiven, you can no longer defer the Social Security taxes.
Brent, I'm going to pose this question to you. What are some of the factors that a company needs to think about deciding what bucket of relief is the most appropriate for them to claim?
Well, PPP is a great program, but it's not for everyone. So even if you are eligible for the program in theory, you have to spend the money on certain things. And first and foremost, 75% of the loan proceeds need to be used on payroll. And so you've got to think about, well, do I have employees still on payroll? If I'm a shutdown restaurant and I've furloughed everybody, there may not be enough eligible uses of the loan proceeds to make it worthwhile to get the PPP program, because you may be able to get the money, but you won't be able to spend it in the first 8 weeks. And you're looking at a low interest, long-term, you know, 2-year loan. That may push some employers towards the tax credit. You know, in other situations, there may be a reason why, you know, there's cash flow right now, but they may in the long run save more money through the tax credits or tax deferrals. And so it just depends on every business, and every business is in a little bit of a different situation.
So, and I know we're in a state of limbo now with the PPP, but up to this point, let's assume you're a business with 500 or fewer employees, you're still in operations. Is the PPP sort of the first type of relief that those businesses are typically, or have tried to claim at this point?
That's right. I think if, and there's always a big if they are eligible, then PPP is often, you know, the first resort, the first option for a lot of companies. But there's a lot of gray area right now as far as who is eligible, even, you know, today, 2 weeks after, and then after all of the initial tranche of funding has been allocated, there's still some confusion about which companies are actually eligible. But you know, assuming that the company actually is eligible and assuming that there are employees still on payroll and business is still in operation, then yes, you know, the majority of companies are going to lean towards the PPP.
$349 billion is part of the program, and it has, as of now, all been allocated.
With the caveat that $10 billion of that fund is set aside for processing fees and expenses, the remainder has all been allocated, yes.
Where do we go from here then?
There are proposals out right now for an extra $250 billion that would be used for the PPP, and another $250 billion that's going to be potentially allocated for hospitals and state and local governments. Where that stands, who knows? But, you know, there obviously our government is working very hard trying to reach an agreement on that, but there's a lot of contention between the two sides as to what should be funded and how it should be funded. So right now we just wait. We do know the SBA is no longer accepting applications for these loans, but we've got to have the funding. And one of the things we're recommending is definitely talk to your bankers, because they may, you know, be able to advise you on the process and keep in touch with you regarding whether a new loan application would be available.
Just to add on to that, I think if we step back, you know, looking at this moment now, 3 to 6 months down the road, this may look a lot more like, you know, halftime of the PPP program, or even the first quarter. There's been some comments today from banking trade groups that there's 700,000 applications that are currently in limbo that have been, you know, submitted to bankers but haven't been processed by the SBA. And so there's a big question about, okay, well, what happens to all of those businesses? There's obviously others that are still planning to apply and still need the money. The Consumer Banking Association estimated that $1 trillion could be needed at the end of the day. And so if you think about it that way, there's a lot that still needs to be done to both get these businesses up and running and back on their feet, but also as far as clarity from the government and the agencies as far as next steps and how this will be implemented when it's all said and done.
Any other types of federal relief that you think might be available in the future?
The Title IV of the CARES Act set aside another large amount of money for a couple of different types of facilities. These are kind of more targeted at mid-sized businesses that aren't going to qualify necessarily for the PPP. And so one that was in kind of summary fashion last week was the Main Street Loan Program, and that sets aside $75 billion for low-interest loans for businesses with up to 10,000 employees. The CARES Act also contemplates a separate lending facility with low-interest rates for businesses of 500 to 10,000 employees. That's a pot of money that could be up to $450 billion or $454 billion to be exact. So that's on the horizon. But I think as we sit here today on, like I said, April 16th, there's no regulations out yet. There's no lenders who are accepting applications for those programs. And the one thing we do know is that those programs won't contemplate any sort of forgiveness. And so they'll be really traditional low interest, long-term loans, but they won't have all the upside of PPP as far as loan forgiveness.
I want to go back to the CARES Act and offer another hypothetical. Assume it's a business that is not eligible for PPP relief. They've suspended their operations. What other types of relief might they be able to use?
You know, you've got the PPP loan and then you've got the employee retention credit. But as you noted, these businesses are furloughing people, laying them off. Those don't really help you in those situations. So businesses should consider unemployment benefits that were offered under the CARES Act. They were actually expanded to include a $600 per individual weekly benefit for the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, which is extremely helpful. And a lot of the states are supplementing their own programs at the state level with additional funding and benefits available. Now, with that said, the money is not endless. And even here in Texas, we're dealing with a risk of unemployment running out of money. They've funded in Texas over $400 million of unemployment benefits to date. And the estimate is that they likely have about 6 weeks left. So if employers haven't availed themselves of unemployment benefits and working with their state unemployment offices, they really need to be looking into that, because you want to make sure you're getting your employees the opportunity to get applications in while the money is there. We anticipate and hope that additional funding for those programs will be made available at the state levels, but you just can't anticipate it and guess that it's going to happen. You've got to just wait till it actually happens.
I think I want to wrap this up, and this is extremely helpful, just to ask each of you, what kinds of questions are you getting from clients? I'm just curious, what are they most concerned, most confused about as they're trying to work through their decision tree about what types of relief might be available?
I'll go ahead and kick us off, and then Brent, you can jump in. The reason we started the checklist that was the genesis of this podcast was clients were really confused as to how to navigate the different relief that was available and how it all interrelates, and they still are. The big question I keep getting, and I'd mentioned it earlier on the podcast, was if I do defer my Social Security taxes, can I do the PPP loan? That has been the biggest one. And yes, you absolutely can. But we get questions as to, you know, what actually is a payroll cost? How do I determine those numbers? What's included? And it is very broad in the way it's defined to include your salary and wages and funding health insurance, retirement benefits. But there's still confusion out there as to exactly how to calculate those and what goes into some of those benefits.
To underscore that confusion, I think borrowers and lenders are kind of all getting up to speed at the same time. I mean, the program really launched on April 3rd. Lenders didn't get final, or I would say the initial set of guidance until the night before. And so a lot of borrowers have had completely different experiences depending on which lender they're talking to, which portal they're using. It is a very, very fluid process. And it obviously makes sense that this was kind of born in the middle of a crisis. And so everybody is doing the best they can given the circumstances. But the most important thing that we've tried to explain to clients and one of the biggest sources of frustration is every time they think they understand the program, new guidance is rolling out. So keeping tabs on all of the latest developments, making sure that you're staying in line of SBA guidance, not just when you apply for the program, but when you start receiving the funds, if you were lucky enough to get the initial tranche of funding and where you put those funds and making sure that you're putting yourself in the best position possible to get 100% of your loan proceeds forgiven. The last thing I'd say is the other thing that I think companies should look out for is options at the state and local level. Harris County, where Houston is located, rolled out their own loan program last week that is kind of separate from the SBA in terms of funding, but also eligibility. I think more localities will probably follow that, not just on the unemployment insurance, but loan programs, grants, other types of assistance. And so it's worth every GC and every company's time to look at, in the various locations where they may have businesses and see what may be available at the local level as well.
Brad and Susan, I know how busy you both are, so I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast again and walking us through the intricacies of the CARES Act. Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to our COVID-19 podcast series. As a reminder, you can find our podcast and other content, including the webinar we had earlier this week and several written materials regarding the CARES Act, including the checklist that Susan mentioned, at haynesboone.com, HaynesBoone.com. Please also feel free to reach out to me or Nathan Koppel if you have any suggestions for further podcast topics. Our podcasts are also available on many of the popular podcast platforms, including Apple, Stitcher, and others. Take care and good night.